Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. You know the type, maybe the office cut-up, or the woman who manages to look busy but avoids work, or the guy who is the long-suffering victim. There's one in every office. Perhaps you or someone you know fits one of these profiles. These behaviors are painfully annoying and stir up conflict in the office. Our guest today is Sylvia LaFaire. She is the author of Don't Bring It to Work, Breaking the Family Patterns That Limit Success. Sylvia is an expert on leadership, workplace behavior, and relationships. Clients from top businesses often have her cell phone number on their speed dial, as she deftly helps them navigate difficult conflicts with board members, employees, associates, and even family. Unlike other executive coaches, LaFaire began her career as a family therapist and is fine-tuned to the reverberations of family lives that play out in the workplace. Sylvia is the founder and president of Creative Energy Options, CEO, a consulting firm with retreat centers in Pennsylvania and New Mexico. CEO also runs team-building workshops and educational seminars for entire organizations focused on results through relationships. Sylvia, thanks for being with us on Edgewise today.
My pleasure.
Sylvia, why did you write this book, and what did you hope to accomplish with it?
It's interesting. I've been writing the book in my mind for maybe 25 years. I was a family therapist, had a large practice in suburban Philadelphia, and one day, somebody who had been through several programs of ours said, would you work with our senior leadership team? Then I said, why? He said, they're fighting. I said, so what? And he said, but you work with people who have to get along, i.e. families, and they had to get along. So thought about it and began to see, okay, families are connected through genetics. People at work are connected through economics. And genetics and economics are two of the most powerful forces that we have to operate with in this world. Went into the organization, began to use what we knew, this is years ago, 25 years ago, and started to experiment. Found that people began to, as he wished, behave better, become more innovative, more cooperative. Mm-hmm. I started to see this link that was really important about relationships at work and how they make a difference in the bottom line. I wrote the book because I think those who really understand the secrets of relationships, especially now in this crazy economy, will come out more whole.
Right. How do we recreate our family experiences in the workplace?
Well, think about it. The original organization we all joined was our family. We signed on whether we wanted to or not.
We didn't have a choice.
No choice there. At that point, we're literally dealt a deck of cards. It's interesting, the cards that Bill Gates' kids have been dealt are different than the ones that Billy the Kid's kids or Billy Joel's kids have been dealt, or you or I. We have certain basic formulae that we have to work with. Mm-hmm. Genetically, you can look in the mirror and say, oh, I have my grandmother's blue eyes or my father's curly hair or something like that. And then you begin to look and see we have personality patterns that are handed down.
Right.
What happens is those get hardwired in us as kids. And when we go to work, we take what we learned in that original organization about telling the truth, about succeeding, about how to handle money, about conflict and how to handle or run away from it. Mm-hmm. When we get in the workplace, we're in an organization that replicates, in many cases, the family.
You're put under the same types of stresses many times. And you react to those stresses the same way. Even if you consciously try not to, you're saying it's almost inevitable that you will.
Well, the newest research in neuropsychology is absolutely exciting because things that I intuitively knew for years and years, they're beginning to research and you can light up parts of the brain and see things that are real.
Right.
What happens is when the old patterns kick in, you can look around the workplace and you'll see somebody who normally has a calm temper slam his hand down on the table and you think, boy, it's just like a kid in a high chair, or you see a group whispering on the side and it looks just like what you see in the schoolyard. Mm-hmm. This is not good or bad. It is a natural tendency and we have to learn how to manage it. We have to be able to observe it and say, yes, it's happening. And as we understand it, it's almost like taking the reins of a wild horse and beginning to control it.
Can you talk a little bit about the roles that people play in the family and how they bring that behavior to work?
Absolutely. It just sort of evolves.
For instance?
Well, somebody in the family is a good student and is the smart one. My son, the doctor kind of syndrome, that is put into the family. And the child who is labeled the smart one often becomes a super achiever when they go to work because they have to fulfill this role in the family to be the best.
Right, right.
My little granddaughter, who is just turning 4, is not because I'm her grandma, I'm telling you the truth. She's very pretty.
Okay.
People would stop my daughter walking down the street with her just to exclaim about her. We talked about the fact that she's going to grow up being the pretty one, which can be a hard label. One day I said to her, Arielle, what does it mean to be beautiful? And she said, oh, it means pretty. I said, well, what does pretty mean? She said, I don't know, Grandma, but that's what I am. And I thought, wow, you can see the beginnings of these patterns starting.
Exactly.
Somebody who maybe they don't have the best ability for sports is put on the side as the one who is incapable. And those roles become patterns. We take them right into the workplace with us.
Let's talk a little bit about the work that you do in your retreat centers. Can you describe just a typical program? How does it start? What happens in the middle? And what are the conclusions?
The program I'll talk about is called Total Leadership Okay. Connections, which is the one where you really deep dive. And it's for people who are in succession planning to take over, high potentials. Mm-hmm. Most of the people who come are sent through their company. Some come on their own or are entrepreneurs.
Okay.
In the first session, we do a really good look at the essence of leadership and the difference between personal power and positional power. And why do people listen to some leaders and why don't they listen to others? Unfortunately, there aren't that many alive today that people would rank as really exemplary leaders. Mm-hmm. When we ask people in the program to write down who they see as leaders, there are a lot of the ones that you and I are familiar with, but it goes down to Jesus and Buddha and Gandhi and Roosevelt. And you begin to say, all right, who's alive right now? Then it's Nelson Mandela.
Interesting.
So in this first session, we spend a lot of time really digging down into leadership. And then we get people prepared to do what is in the book. And it's called a Sankofa map. Mm-hmm. So let me explain that a little bit. It's really powerful stuff.
This is a graphical representation of relationships.
Absolutely. In your family through generations. It came from the field of family therapy. For me, it was power to the people. As a therapist, I would sit and do a genogram with a person mm-hmm. or people in a family. It's something you can do and begin to see the mm-hmm. patterns that come from generation to generation. We prepare people for that. And then they have a couple of months to do their homework. Mm-hmm. And the homework means talking to relatives and asking questions that normally aren't talked about very much.
Sure.
Some people are very tentative about it. Others dive right in. But everybody comes back with information, and then they are offered the opportunity to present this and look at the patterns.
Right.
What comes to my mind that was incredibly powerful, because it's not about did you like your mother better or father better, or did you fight with your siblings? It's about the patterns that go through the generations.
Right.
One woman who was in the program talked about her parents who were, as she saw them, both failures, couldn't make it. And she was charging ahead to make it. But every time she got to that next level of success, she stopped. Mm. So as she looked back at her history, her great-grandmother was a pioneer who was in a covered wagon who went west. She began to look at that and saw the pioneer spirit that, however it had not continued in the next generations, had been there. After she finished looking at the map and began to see this, something clicked for her. And within 3 or 4 months, she had a promotion. Mm-hmm. When we talked about it, she said it was really seeing that was in her DNA, if mm-hmm. you will, her mm-hmm. emotional DNA. And in the beginning of my book, I have a quote from the Australian Aborigines, and it says, I carry my ancestors in my heart and sometimes on my back.
Exactly.
Then after we do session two, which is really going deeply to explore oneself and one's personal patterns, session three is all about integration, how that gets played out in the workplace, and how as leaders we need to manage ourselves and help others see their patterns.
Right.
By the end of that, we do a thing called pep talk, which stands for pattern encounter process. We have to face our patterns and tackle them to the ground.
Right.
And then session four is all about innovation and how to really create that environment at work where it's just fun to create together.
Oh, absolutely. How do you address the typical question you would get from old school leaders, which is these soft skill things? Yeah, when everything is going right, maybe it's something I would spend some time on, but why would I consider doing this psycho...
Say it, babble.
I didn't say it. You said it. Stuff right now when the economy is in such turmoil.
First, let me say that we've been living under an illusion that we can separate who we are at home from who we are at work. When you create an illusion like that, you get the Bernie Madoffs of the world. Every time I see him on television, I think he looks like the nicest, kindest man. And then I think of what he did and how you can really compartmentalize. It's not healthy. And we're paying the price for that. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing.
Okay.
What I'm talking about in the book and what you and I are talking about now is not psychotherapy. Psychotherapy has its place, and it's there really deep-seated, long-term problems that sink down into depression. Go to a therapist. I did it for years. It has its value. What I'm talking about is finding those patterns that we had from our survival skills in childhood, how we bring to work. And while the book was finished before the economic meltdown, it's actually more important now than even when I wrote it, because this is not me. This is like gravity. I'm just reporting it. When anxiety hits that hot button, we revert to these patterns, and unless we can work with them in the workplace, people become like deer in the headlights. The avoiders run away. The deniers say, what problem? The procrastinators say, the dog ate my computer. And we don't get any real work done.
Yeah. It just seems that there's an unending litany of that, whether you're out to tar and feather somebody or you're out to deny you knew anything about it. You're hearing all these different stories. And if you close your eyes, you're listening to a classroom full of second graders.
Or a family that is scared to death. In the family, the natural tendency, the need, is homeostasis. It's to survive.
Right.
Families want to survive. Organizations want to survive. But survival skills, those aren't the skills that are going to make us thrive.
Right.
So for those who talk about the soft skills, first of all, they aren't. They're the hardest things we have to do.
Absolutely.
I was just talking to somebody about taking some of this into an MBA program where the idea is, can we bring people through these programs who are whole people? So when they go into the workplace, they're able to see things from a much more systemic perspective. And our theory that we work with at CEO is we're all connected and nobody wins unless we all do.
And something like this would be a wonderful parallel track for a lot of the business ethics training that's going on right now, where those are just hard and fast rules. This is know yourself.
Well, that's one of the major tenets from ancient times. But I want to add something.
Sure.
This is for those who go soft skills and then put the garlic in front of them so that people will go away. Work is not a rehab facility. And I'm not espousing that. If there are problems, people have to go and get the help they need. And if they can't break their patterns, they have to either be helped to see that it's time for them to leave, or if they need to be let go, it's okay. I'm not suggesting we keep everybody there and sing kumbaya, which is the old model of this. I'm saying help people see the patterns and get beyond them.
And a book is not going to solve those deeper problems. You really need to talk to a professional.
If they're that deep, absolutely.
Right. I want to thank our guest today, Sylvia LaFaire, author of the book, Don't Bring It to Work, Breaking the Family Patterns That Limit Success. Sylvia, it was very nice to meet you.
Same here. Thanks for the time.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback. So please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.